Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And we've got another great episode lined up for you tonight. We're going to be doing something a little bit different tonight than the deck test we've done in the past. We're going to be looking at a brand new deck that Jake has been brewing with us.
Yes, this is my, I guess I'm calling it Mad Cow. It's Neheb the Eternal. For those of you not familiar with this card, that means you're a very reasonable person. Neheb is a zombie minotaur warrior for 3 generic and 2 red. It has Afflict 3, which means whenever he is blocked, the defending player loses 3 life. And the big deal here is that at the beginning of my post-combat main phase, I add red to my mana pool for each 1 life my opponents have lost this turn. And Neheb is a 4/6 himself.
And as we all know, when you're first brewing a new deck, those first few games can really make it or break it. It can feel really bad when you spent all that time and energy brewing a deck only for it to be wasted because the deck did not do what you wanted it to do, or it didn't perform exactly the way you envisioned it. It can also be really disheartening when you have excitement for a brand new deck and you've been reading primers about it and you've been trying to assemble the cards for it and orders are still coming in, only for it to just fizzle when you sit down to play with it for the first time and realize that this is not really what you were looking for in the deck. So we're going to be digging into Jake's new brew today, and we're going to look at how Neheb kind of worked in the first few games that we got to try with it. But before we really dig into Neheb, we got a little bit of news that's come out recently. Alex, why don't you tell us about some of the news that's been happening?
Well, the biggest thing with news since the last time we were able to record is 2 new sets have come out, Jumpstart and most recently Double Masters. And unfortunately, both releases, while absolutely chock full of cards that are definitely interesting to the Commander players, have both been in short supply. So out of all of us here, only John and Jake were actually able to get any Jumpstart cards. And then when Double Masters finally arrived, we received them a bit late. There were reports of no supplies, orders being canceled, cards being bent. My own box stoppers came in bent. And everything is all this chock full of new stuff coming out, and it's just hard to get our hands on it.
We've been told by Wizards, at least with Jumpstart, that there is a second printing on the horizon, apparently. But for now, prices are inflated in weird ways with Jumpstart. It's kind of a mess right now with how the prices are looking on the secondary market. Probably right to wait on Jumpstart cards if you don't need them immediately.
Yeah, especially because there's only a few new cards in Jumpstart, so they're carrying most of the price of the set.
Yeah, it's kind of Allosaurus Shepherd's up to 80 right now.
Yeah, it just keeps going up.
Well, in lighter news, at least we get to look forward to Commander Fest Online at the end of the month on August 22nd and 23rd. This is another one that they're partnering with Spelltable with, which we've been getting more and more reps with. And it looks like Gavin Verhey from Wizards of the Coast is going to be doing an announcement or a panel or something like that on their Twitch stream with what's coming with the rest of 2020, which I guess means Commander Legends, not Signature Spellbook, but Commander Green.
It's like the green spellbook.
but it's not, because it's not Nissa. I don't know, but it looks like,
yeah,
it looks like we're going to get Bloom Tender and Court of Calling, question mark? I don't think that's been confirmed yet.
Yeah, I think they've done like 2 art reveals, but haven't said what the cards are. One of them has like Yisan on it, but it is not Yisan himself, so
it's probably Court of Calling. I think it's Court of Calling. Yeah.
Which is good. I would like to get some new art for Court of Calling. I'm not sure how it's going to be different from a Signature Spellbook. I just don't know what it's going to be. So I guess we'll find out more at that point. And then obviously everyone's excited to hear about what Commander Masters?
I think that's it, yep.
Commander Legends, yeah. Is going to be like where they have 75 new legendaries and it's supposed to be a draftable format. It's going to be interesting. It very well could be, and if we could have a draft format as good as Dominaria, I am all about that. That would be awesome.
I'm not going to lie, out of all of that, I'm most excited for the Zendikar Rising spoilers to start up, because Landfall is a thing that I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So definitely looking forward to seeing those.
There's also going to be the Zendikar Rising Commander decks, and They usually like to showcase one of the mechanics, so I could see us getting a new landfall-based commander, possibly.
One can only hope.
Yeah, and I don't know if we've heard yet if this is going to be more like Ikoria, where we had brand new legends as part of those commander decks, or it will be just essentially cards from the set packaged into a commander deck. Hopefully, we'll find that out too as part of that announcement.
I think it's supposed to be just like a handful of new cards, and then the rest is just kind of like an on-ramp for them. So I don't think it's going to be chock full of, new commander staples like commander releases have been in the past. But hopefully we get something good out of it.
Yeah, they could split the difference and have it be somewhere closer to what the Brawl decks were like with Throne of Eldraine, where there were a handful of quote-unquote new cards in it, and then primarily reprints from recent sets. That would kind of make sense for them as well. But it sounds like they're saying these are definitely commander decks and not Brawl decks this time.
I mean, I'd be fine with that if they're the same quality as the Brawl decks, because the Brawl decks introduced four new legendary commanders that were fantastic, each in their own regards.
Borderline busted in some cases. But yeah. They had some good ideas in there. Whether or not the Arcane Signet controversy is worth rehashing, I don't know. But I'm still looking forward to seeing what they have in store for us. And
Definitely.
then Jake, you added something else here to our docket of news items we got to cover.
Yeah, this is definitely like hot off the presses or whatever. The CEDH decklist database just got a complete overhaul like yesterday or a day before. This is the compendium of meta. I'm doing air quotes on the podcast. It's really effective of meta CEDH decks, and they had a it was a decent website before. Now it's much cleaner, much snappier. And if you ever visit it on mobile, you can actually use it. So that's a nice upgrade there. Still the same content. They're, you can submit decks, have them reviewed or whatever it is. And yeah, so just a new overhaul, visual overhaul for the valuable resource that's been out there for a little while.
And if you're interested in contributing to the CEDH decklist database, they do have a Discord server where they have a pretty great community going, a lot of discussion, a lot of feedback. It seems like they're doing a nice job of trying to maintain not just the tier one meta of four color commanders, but they're really trying to include decks that can compete with CEDH decks, even if they're not at the tippy top of the meta. So I really like that.
You can also, there's a new way to sort. You can do it by, it used to just be by color, but you can also do it by newest. So you can see the stuff that's getting added as it gets added. There's some spicy stuff in there. I just saw a Tashar deck, the mono white commander.
Love me some Tashar. Ah, so good. Well, moving right along, before we get to the games we played with Neheb, we have some other news in our local meta with things that we've been doing. Xenagos is back.
Yes, so I had a Xenagos deck a long time ago, and I actually used that to kind of help get my wife interested in Commander, and she really enjoys it because the things she enjoys are destroying lands and killing people very aggressively. So there we go. That's what the deck does. She enjoys it. She likes to swing for lethal constantly.
And as far as an aggressive deck goes, having a nice solid green mana base under it where you can ramp out those little dorks and quickly get Xenagos and then big evasive fatties online, it works. It does what it wants to do fairly consistently, and it hits hard.
As we can all attest, having taken shots to the face with it this past week.
As we each raced to get off the throne because we just knew that she was going to have Scourge of the Throne in hand. And if she attacked the person with the most life, not only would it get bigger, it would get even bigger because then there would be another combat step where she would attack the person on the throne again and she would deal twice as much damage. And oh, it just hurt so much. Oh, it was always good to be able to hit myself with a pain land just to make sure I wasn't on the throne. And then Alex, you are getting your Korvald deck back in shape as well. Tell us about that.
I am. Landfall has always been something that has appealed to me, and Korvold is the current iteration of all my landfall dreams. So much so that I've actually started the process of trying to foil out the Korvold deck with, the new foil box toppers and whatnot. But it was trying to do multiple things, like, you know, have landfall, but also have some, you know, sac value, some recursion triggers, things of that nature. And I'm slowly moving away from those and just kind of going all in on the landfall game plan. And that's kind of where my hopes and dreams are going for Zendikar Rising, is that Corvalds are going to get some love in terms of landfall cards that fall into, you know, the Jund color wheel. Fingers crossed.
Certainly the right set for it to happen in.
If we don't get something in Zendikar Rising, I think it's going to be a long time before Corvald sees any kind of upgrades.
Yeah, you got a lot of good stuff in the deck at the moment. It feels like you've really been honing that deck on exactly what you wanted to do, as opposed to, here's a bunch of things I can sacrifice. Now it is really clearly, I am going to be using this pool of lands as a resource, not just for mana, but also to draw cards and also to get other benefits. And I, having been on the receiving end of that Corvald list several times now, I can definitely attest that, left unchecked, Corvald by himself makes any landfall or land sacrifice engine very, very, very powerful.
Yeah, it's the whole left unchecked part. So it's right now it's the point where it's filled to bursting with things that I like that feel synergetic. And I don't have any of the cards that would be considered, you know, staples now in the more tuned decks, like Deflecting SWAT and all that. And I'm actively working to include single target removal and, you know, protection spells, because I went so hard in on the landfall aspect of it, I didn't leave much room for anything else. So it's now it's getting time for some awkward cuts.
Yeah, we're at that point with quite a few decks on our meta right now, but tonight the spotlight is going on to Neheb. So, Jake, you've often said you're not the brewer of the group, but you definitely iterate on decks faster than anyone else in our meta. I remember very vividly us having a discussion, like 7:15 in the morning after we did a game one night, and you go, yeah, I cut about 10 cards from Corvald. Damn, man. You can iterate on a deck very, very, very quickly. And, of course, we've also kind of joked that if a deck doesn't have black in it, you won't play it. So can you kind of explain what the appeal is in Commander with black as part of the color identity?
Sure. And for me, it extends beyond Commander. Like, even when I first started playing Magic, I always really enjoyed playing with the black cards because, you know, they were spooky and they had, like, people getting flayed on them, and that was like so metal when I was a 13-year-old kid that just wanted to have zombies run around and attack people. But recently, I think the flavor text of Dark Confidant kind of nails it. It's greatness at any cost. So I certainly enjoy that black offers a lot of very powerful effects, even though there's usually downsides to it, and I don't mind paying those costs in order to gain whatever it is. So usually crazy amounts of card draw, or in some cases mana. They're just really strong cards, and I like to play with really strong cards.
You certainly do. So now we're looking at a deck that you've built that specifically excludes black. Not at all because we challenged you and said Jake will never play a deck that doesn't have black in it. What kind of things did you find yourself missing when you were building this deck?
All right, so mono red certainly has some limitations there. There's next to zero mana dorks. The ones that it does have are very weird or one shot. There's very little in the way of tutoring. You can basically gamble and hope. There's not much card draw. What red's really good at is doing damage.
That it is.
The downside in Commander is that that's usually a pretty awful route to take, because all the cards, the majority of the cards, are printed and costed for 1v1 player or 1v1 games, where you're just trying to deal 20 or usually less damage, versus Commander, where you're trying to do 120 damage, which is a bit of a higher ask.
So with that in mind, what then drew you to Neheb?
So honestly, it was a little bit of the lighthearted comments of never having a non-black deck. And also I wanted to have something that wasn't super high power level. So I chose a very build around commander that I don't think has too high of a ceiling. So I could basically max this out as best I could, and it would still be relatively okay to play in like a balanced group or something.
All right.
Also, there was like my previous deck along these same lines was Greven. And the thing I really did not like about that deck was that just combat focused decks, and especially Voltron decks, you kind of have to go after one person at a time, which works for the early game. You can usually knock one or two players out, but then you're left fighting one person. The issues that are around that is that I don't really enjoy the king making aspect of multiplayer, so I could usually pick one player and knock them out of the game, which is no fun for that player because then they're out of the game and I have to sit around and wait. And then later on at the end of the game, I could usually muster enough to severely cripple or take out one player and then leave myself open, which, I mean, I'm not winning the game that way. And it's also just kind of taking agency out of other players' hands. So Naheb addressed that because it is kind of more of a combo-y deck. I mean, I guess it is a combo deck in that it generates a ton of mana and goes off, but it does it through the combat step. And when it does go off, it usually takes out the entire table, which I'm very much a fan of. I know some people do not like decks that just kind of go off and kill the table or go off and just win. But for me, the best aspect of that is that nobody is sitting around waiting for the game to end, where they're just chilling out for 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah, I personally agree with you on that part, Jake. I would prefer it if the game ended and then we got to play a new game, as opposed to one person gets knocked out and then is forced into spectator mode for the next 40 minutes while we wait for the last three players to then grind out this mess that they've left on the battlefield. What do you think, Alex?
Definitely. Like, if the game's gonna end, and it's gonna end with one person getting knocked out, and then one person being severely crippled, and then a deck trying to get back to critical mass and then kill that last player, I'd rather we just all be put out of our misery and just go on to the next game.
So, how did you go about assembling this deck, Jake? Did you use any online tools, any particular template you use when you're trying to brew a deck? How did you approach the actual building process?
So, like you guys mentioned, I don't really consider myself a brewer because I don't usually just sit down with a list of, or an empty list and just throw 100 cards in and make a creation. So for this, I started out by looking at existing decks. I just kind of poked around on like Tapped Out and Moxfield and YouTube and just to see what different people were doing with their Naheb brews. And then also, I do use the CEDH decklist database as a frequent resource. Obviously, Naheb has no entry on there, but there are other decks that are in the same color. I think right now it is just Godo, so I did use Godo as a reference, especially because the CEDH Godo list is, I mean, it's not the same as Naheb, but it does have a couple of similarities to it in that you're trying to get out a five cost commander as fast as you can and then ride the back of that to victory. So it had like the basic list of mana rocks and lands and stuff to look at.
So what you're saying is when you were using the CEDH decklist database, your goal was to try to see if there were any particular cards that are being used by other decks that are leaning heavily on red that you might want to leverage in a similar way. You identified a similarity between the approach you saw with Godo and the approach you wanted to take with Naheb. How am I going to get this five mana giant monster onto the field as quickly as I can?
Yeah, that is an accurate statement. I also use the decklist database for other decks too when I'm making them that are usually a more diverse color range, and that's a really easy way for me to kind of go in and grab a mana base, so I don't have to flip through all my lands and figure out which ones are going in which decks. I can just go, oh hey, this is a Jund deck. Let's look at a couple of low average CMC Jund decks and see how their mana base looks and use that as a template.
So the next thing we'll look at then, now that we kind of have an idea of the basic goals of the deck, the basic things you were looking for, let's talk about the strategy. Was this deck a focus deck or was this a value deck? So when we're talking about this, a focus deck is one that prioritizes threats over answers, optimizing for the short game. Focus deck seeks to close out the game before a value deck can take over the game. Focus decks will seek to play out their threats and execute on a game plan over disrupting opponents' plans, taking the proactive approach preferentially over being reactive. Some focus decks are more focused than others, of course, and some will simply lean focus, and others, while they prefer to execute on a plan for the short game, they can also generate resources more like a value deck if the game state requires it. Alex, could you read us on the value entry?
Value is a value that prioritizes resource advantage over speed, optimizing for a long-term game. A value deck seeks to disrupt more focused opponents while creating and exploiting resource imbalances to win. Value decks will be willing to spend resources to drop threats from opponents in a more reactive style, but aren't primarily reactive. Reactive gameplay simply means to push the game towards a long game where resource advantage takes over. Some value decks are more value-driven than others. Some simply lean value, and while they're most adept at generating resource advantage, they may be able to execute a game plan more quickly than an all-in value deck can react.
Yeah, so between these strategies, I think it's pretty safe to say Neheb was a focused deck, leaning in very hard on casting Neheb and getting some damage in, and then going all in on the ridiculous big red mana stuff.
So definitely not focused on trying to keep the game under control. Definitely focused on its own game plan and resolving its rocks, its threats, and its win conditions before other decks could get set up.
Absolutely. It does not have the ability to really go into the long game for just because of how it was built. And also because, again, it is mono red. Red has some difficulty in answering certain types of cards, and it's difficult to dig your way out from a lot of like stacks-based board states.
So we'll get back into Alex and I having played against the deck, how we felt with this, but we'll definitely keep in mind that this deck is aiming to be focused. Now, the next question then is, what quadrant were you aiming for when you were building this? Is this going to, would you aim for this to be optimized like CEDH adjacent? Were you aiming for a pure casual deck that you could sit down with and play with players who are just breaking open precons for the first time?
So I think when I initially sat down, I wasn't sure how it was going to end up. So I aimed for linear in that it was built to be as consistent as possible and to maximize its the routes it was taking. But it is, again, it's an Neheb deck, so it's just trying to get ridiculous amounts of mana off the back of Neheb, so it definitely had to include some really oddball cards that aren't generally considered commander staples, like Flame Rift, where it's a card that does 4 damage to each player for 2 mana, which, you know, nobody's ever really going to play that.
Definitely
this
a
deck,
spicy
it
include.
Turns out, yeah, in this deck it turns out to be a 12 mana ritual, which, hey, that's cool. So, yeah, I think I was aiming for linear, but I was also prepared that it would not be able to actually make it that high in terms of consistency. So I just kind of wanted to play it out and see how it would shake out.
All right. And again, I think when we get to talking about the post game, we can discuss Jake, how Alex and I felt while we were playing against it, our debrief for it. So what kind of themes did you wind up including the deck to make it work? I think you kind of hinted at one of the themes with Flame Rift.
Yeah, so lots of global damage spells. This is actually a lot of similarities to the Greven deck, but in this case I'm trying to do damage to my opponents instead of myself, which, yes, novel concept. So there's a couple things like Flame Rift, there's you know, the earthquake type of effects. Just anything that can deal a decent amount of damage to the other players so that in my post-combat main phase I get a very large amount of mana. And then typically I will dump that mana into other every opponent damage spells, so it's kind of paying for my my effects with the same effect type of thing.
You also made use of a pretty liberal number of I guess we call them impulsive draw effects these days, which is a design that came out of the past few years in R&D with Red, where Red will exile the top few cards of their deck, and then until the end of this turn or the end of the next turn, they can play or cast those spells.
Yeah, so again, Red's not the best at drawing cards, and I knew that as a red deck that's trying to ramp out really fast, I'm going to have an empty hand pretty quickly, ideally at least. So I looked at the second best thing, and that's this new, quote-unquote new, impulsive draw effect. There's actually a lot of them, so I was able to be a little picky. Some of the stuff like Light Up the Stage, so it's a 3-mana sorcery, 2 generic and 1 red. Exile the top 2 cards of your library until the end of your next turn. You may play those cards. And this also has Spectacle for 1 red. So if one of my opponents has lost life, I can cast it for just 1 red. And basically, these are just a way for me to, after my initial hand dump has been achieved, I can continue to be in the game and not just be stuck in top deck mode. And there, like I mentioned, there are a lot more of these than I had initially thought, and they also performed a fair bit better than I was expecting.
Oh, I've definitely got some notes for you with the debrief with those. I was very impressed with how those performed in this particular deck. With the way you built the deck, it did seem to line up well. Are there any other key cards or like sub-themes you included in the deck that you wanted to go over before we talked about the games we played?
I guess one other is that it is, again, it is a mono red deck, so I really wanted to lean in on the non-basic land hate that red has to offer. This deck has 31 lands in it, and 26 of them are mountains. So I was very comfortable with running the like Blood Moon, Magus of the Moon, Ruination, that kind of stuff. Price of Progress is another one that is
quite devastating against my Cobalt
deck. It's pretty nice because it fills both roles. It is leaning into that whole non-basic land hate thing, but it also deals a ridiculous number of damage to my opponents. So hooray for mana ramp that also kills people.
Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned, since we last recorded, we've played quite a few games with Neheb, and we're actually going to talk about and debrief on these couple of games that we played. So, in the first game that we played, I was on my Aminatu the Fate Shifter, which was kind of an Esper Reanimator blink deck, aiming pretty heavily for value over focused and more of a balanced type deck. Alex, you were on your Korval deck, where you were going for Landfall, again, much more heavily into value than on the focus end of the spectrum, but also in that balanced quadrant. And last but not least, one of our friends joined us with Yuriko the Tiger Shadow, which was probably the other most focused deck at the table, just trying to get unblockable creatures and ninjas out to trigger Yuriko's top deck ability to flip expensive cards and dome the table. And last but not least, we had Neheb there. So in game one, I think we can summarize pretty succinctly to say that Neheb comboed out really impressively.
Yeah. So I don't have all the turn-by-turn notes for this, but I do remember hitting a lot of really well-timed mana rocks and rituals, getting Neheb out two or turn three, something like that, fairly early. And then I got some pretty solid draws where I was able to do just enough damage to the table for my post-combat main phase to fill me up with red mana and then go off with that.
Game two was fairly similar. We had the same pod composition with Aminatu, Korvald, Yuriko, and Neheb again. And once again, Neheb comboed out on us. I don't remember if it was quite as fast. I believe this was the game where my Aminatu deck, I really telegraphed that I'm going to throw Elesh Norn and something else horrible into my graveyard with a Buried Alive effect. Basically just telling everybody, guys, I've got an Animate Dead in hand. Are you going to try to stop me or not? And sure enough, I got stopped.
I think this is the one where I got the Heartless Hidetsugu out.
Oh, God, it was.
And that's pretty good for this deck.
Yeah, I got like here, have 60
40
red
or
mana.
Something mana before even doing an attack, and then
that's good stuff. That was absolutely insane.
my field of mana dorks was not looking forward to dealing with an Elesh Norn at that time.
No, and I think, Alex, you kind of mentioned that one of the things you were looking at for Korvold was to have more interaction and more answers, and I think we were both feeling that in these games when we were sitting down across from Neheb, where if we had a way to answer Neheb and keep him from resolving, we would have been in a lot better shape. But when we just were short on interaction, Neheb pounced and crushed us.
Yeah, ultimately it came down to where the games, whether they're over on turn 3, turn 4, turn 5, whether they're over on turn 9, turn 10, turn 11, all depend on whether or not a Corvold could resolve and then just not be answered.
You mean Neheb?
Neheb, sorry, yeah. Neheb resolves and then, we take inconsequentially, 12 damage off of a rendered a random draft chaff card. And the next thing we're being hit for like a rolling earthquake for 98.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is pretty funny. There's a lot of cards in here that are like 12 cents and 82 cents.
Oh, but that's the glorious spice. All right. Game number three we had. I was on my Sir Conrad the Grim deck, which was an Aristocrats deck. Leans towards value, but it's definitely not in the value spectrum that Corvald is, for example. Alex, you were still on Corvald for this deck. We actually lost our fourth player, but Jake remained on Neheb testing that. And in this one, it kind of felt like Neheb stumbled.
Yeah, just the downside of, not having a huge suite of mana dorks and mana rocks. I lean on what I can and just didn't draw the gas and required to get rolling.
I think this is the game we actually killed Neheb when it came out.
Yeah, I believe that is what happened. I had to use a one-shot ritual to get Neheb out. And then once he died, he was up to seven mana, and I'm like, well, I couldn't even cast him the first time, so yeah.
That slowed Neheb down a lot. Then I believe Conrad landed Grey Merchant for a, was it like a 12-point life drain from everybody?
Yeah, it was not pleasant.
No.
Yeah, that was pretty rough, and at that point, Neheb was a spectator.
Yeah, at that point, I think the damage was done. It was just a matter of grinding out the last few points of life, which wound up being way more of a grind than I think any of us wanted it to be. Alex, you and I were in top deck mode for like 7 or 8
Oh yeah,
turns, and I was
I
just trying to ping you down from like 5. Oh, that was brutal. But eventually, you had me on lockdown with Strip Mine plus Crucible of Worlds. I had you with Conrad on the field, and any landfall would have gotten me back Blood Artist, which would have pinged you down, or any creature draw would have gotten there, or any hit off
You had
of.
a Carnival of Souls kept giving you mana so that you could try and Corvold me to death. It was, yeah. And ultimately, it was a Nihil Spellbomb that got it, wasn't it?
It was a Nihil Spellbomb exiling my entire graveyard to
And
make sure I
Coral.
got the last 2 points of damage I needed to you. So we rested, we recuperated, we played another couple games a few days later, and this was actually the triumphant return of Xenagos, who is definitely, if we would all agree, Xenagos is a focus deck. It's probably a little bit more resilient than Neheb with a long game, just having green underneath of its feet to be able to have a stable mana base. But Alex, you were still on Corvold for this game with your landfall deck. I had switched over to my Karlov of the Ghost Council deck with the Loras as a companion. This deck, I pretty comfortably say at this point that it's leaning much more towards value as opposed to being a focus deck, even with its low mana curve. But I think it also falls into that balanced quadrant. And this was an interesting one, how it played out.
Yeah, the I don't know if you guys want to have anything leading up to the final turns.
So from my standpoint playing Karlov, I had all of the payoffs, which is primarily Karlov, for life gain, but I could not get any life gain triggers going. I was not drawing into any Soul Sisters. I didn't have any way to start putting counters onto Karlov, which meant that I was essentially a non-player for most of the beginning of this game. And then Alex, you were working with Corvald, and I think you were kind of the one who was playing Table Police a little bit while Xenagos was just bashing all of us in the face.
Yeah, that's how that first game went, and then Neheb out of nowhere.
It was
Debatably so. So at this point, Jake, why don't you tell this part of the story since you were literally in the room for it?
yeah, so like we mentioned, my wife was playing Xenagos and she has her desk set up next to mine, so we were playing over webcam even though I could just see her. I had a pretty good turn. I managed to get Seize the Day out and flash it back, so getting multiple combat steps, which results in ridiculous amounts of mana. And I very triumphantly played Jaya's Immolating Inferno for like 60 or something to deal 60 damage to each of three targets.
Right, three targets. Three That's the weird part about that, but you know, that custom built for Commander.
Yeah. So I chose my three opponents as my three targets, thinking, hey, this is pretty sweet. Everybody's like tapped out, so nobody can interact with me, and got lethal on the stack. And then she actually had a deflecting SWAT, which, you know, changed
yep.
the targets.
So she can change the targets to anything she wants, and she very easily changed them to me and you and Alex. And that was how Xanagos grew a tail and swatted us to death.
That's how that game went.
Yeah, but in all honesty, that was, again, Neheb did its thing. Neheb got in there, dealt damage, and was able to generate a ridiculous amount of mana and combo out, essentially. Then game number five, which was the last game we got to playtest with Neheb, we again had the lineup of Xanagos, Korvald, Karlov, and Neheb. This game wound up being a little bit weird. Again, Jake, do you agree it felt like Neheb just couldn't get his feet under him? You couldn't get the ramp going to hit that five mana?
Yeah, it was a pretty slow start, and never even... I don't even remember if I cast Neheb this game or not.
I think that was one of my better starts, where I was I knew I didn't have a way to deal with Neheb specifically, but I had tons of way to deal with lands and artifacts in hand, and I think that's the game I was just going after your mana base.
Yeah, you were blowing up all the rocks, and I know there were at least a couple strip mines sent over my way. I'm like, well, all right. Oh, no, I do remember I managed to cast Neheb one time, because I'm like, finally, I have some way of generating mana. And it wasn't even like in an attempt to do anything broken. I just wanted to have like four or five mana. And then he died. So, you know.
Yep. And at that point, I was getting payoffs out for Karlov, and I was trying to stabilize the board a little bit. But by that point, Korvald had just gotten so big so fast that you were... I was three-shotted by Korvald at that point. Unfortunately, Jake, your wife, had to go in early for the night. So Xanagos scooped and kind of left the table a little bit unbalanced, where because of a previous arrangement, I had agreed not to target Alex's anything going on Korvald's side of the board. And I honored that and got my face punched off as a result of it. And at that point, it just felt like, Neheb was just not in a position to be able to come back at that point.
I mean, I was in a solid place that one. That's what happens when you get Sylvan Safekeeper on turn two.
Yeah, there was just not enough. I could not trigger enough life gain on Karlov to fight through Sylvan Safekeeper and deny you enough resources at that point. It was a race of resources against resources, and you had the ability to get lands back out fast enough from, was it Crucible? I think it was Crucible on that, yeah. And
you
I kicked
it three times.
Yeah, wasn't enough. And I actually had Anguished Unmaking in my hand towards the end of it, but at that point, I was so close to dying, I had to use it on Korvald, or I had to force as many saves as possible, essentially. Anyway, so those were the games we played. So let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, Jake, what went right?
So the Impulsive Draw, we mentioned it a couple times, that went really well. I was able to chain a whole bunch of those together after getting a very large amount of mana and having almost no cards in hand. I could get a couple of those to roll into each other. The templating in all these is all over the place. Some of them let you play the cards until the end of your next turn, so those are also useful for trying to hit some lands. So you can like cast the Impulsive Draw, and hopefully your next turn you can play one of the lands if you're not already dead. So that worked out pretty well. I think the MVP of the deck... Oh, go ahead, John.
Yeah, so I agree with you 100%. And I think the Impulsive Draw was a particularly good choice for this deck in particular, because this is a deck that generates so much mana that just having extra cards for the turn is often enough to just get where you need to go. It doesn't matter that you're going to exile them, because essentially you're going to draw 12 extra cards that turn. And if any one of them is an earthquake effect or some kind of mass damage effect, you're going to win off of it.
Or seize the day.
Well, I think that gets us into our next one. What else went right?
So the MVP of this deck would be seize the day. I used it in a couple different ways. So, for those unfamiliar with it, it is three generic and one red for a sorcery. You untap target creature. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase followed by an additional main phase. And it also has flashback for two generic and a red. So, obviously, extra combat steps are kind of helpful because a lot of the times it means more damage. One thing I had to notice is that there's a fair number of extra combat step cards. Not all of them have that clause of an additional main phase. Some of them will have you do your extra combat, untap your creatures, and there's just another extra combat. So without that post-combat main phase, there's no Neheb trigger to get all your mana. So I had to kind of pick the ones that would give me those extra main phase triggers.
And
Seize the Day does that.
right. And in particular with Neheb, with his ability saying that at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, add red for each one life your opponents have lost this turn. That makes it multiplicative. So if you had done 10 damage in the pre-combat main phase, 3 damage in the post-combat main phase, that's 13. Use it to activate Seize the Day. And even if all you're doing is just another 3 damage because somebody else blocks and you afflict, that means then you've seen 13 mana already, and then an additional 16 mana in your new post-combat main phase. That just got out of hand so fast.
Yeah, and you can usually pay to for its flashback cost with the mana it's generating, so you get two uses of Seize the Day each time. And once I even use the untap effect on what was it, the Heartless Hidetsugu, so that I could just activate him twice in a turn, which is stupid but really fun.
No, that did its job.
Yeah. So that's definitely like it's an insane amount of mana that it can generate, which is the whole point of the deck.
What do you think, Alex?
It makes me sad when a deck that isn't landfalled somehow generates more mana than landfall does.
Hey, rituals are good at that, though.
All you have to do is punch someone so hard that the mana falls out of them.
Like rings from Sonic enemies.
Yes.
What else went right with Neb?
He killed people, so that was cool.
Killed them hard, killed them fast.
Honestly, that was pretty much it. It seemed like it did have enough redundancy in the cards that even though I couldn't get the same cards each game, I was able to get enough of the same effect to be able to kind of just do the plan.
It felt similar to how I've had my Galta deck play out, which I consider my most linear deck, where I don't have the same effect I can get consistently with that deck, but I can get enough of similar effects that once it gets going, it often does balloon out of control in a similar way. Is there anything, Alex, that you saw from the games we played together where there might be things there that fell short? Like, what was the bad? What didn't work?
The deck when it doesn't have mana. So that's the but I mean that can be true for any deck, but with
Right.
other decks that aren't mono red, you've got mana dorks, you've got spells that can ramp you in the form of like Cultivate, Kadama's Reach, things like that. Red is rituals and rocks. So if you're light on rituals and you play a rock, it gets destroyed and it's open to disruption in terms of mana generation more so than other decks, and that's just the win big, lose big kind of payoff of mono red and what the deck does. When it has mana and when it has card draw, it just goes to face. Like zero to dead relatively quickly. But if it stumbles, it has a hard time recovering than some of the other decks that, have a bit more available to it than just being mono red.
What about you, Jake? You were sitting in the pilot seat. What kind of things did you feel just fell short?
Well, from the 5 games that we did play with it so far, I think that's really the main issue is that it is very linear in that if I can't get to my game plan of getting the commander out and getting a swing and having some effects go off, then it doesn't really get to do a whole lot. I am definitely kind of taking advantage of our meta in that there wasn't a ton of like direct answers in removal for a little while. So I was able to stick Neheb for a couple of those games and just roll with it. There's definitely some of the like if there was a little bit more in the way of pinpoint removal, he could very quickly get out of the castable range. Oubliette just turns this deck off. So now that Oubliette is a lot more reasonable to obtain. It just phases him out, and there is no way for me to destroy Oubliette, so it becomes a really bad deck full of X spells and no way to generate mana.
Jake, did I tell you that I did open one of those, by the way?
That's not surprising.
No, yeah. I don't have any deck to put it in at the moment, but just
did I tell you that's
coming for you to have.
Yeah, that's definitely reasonable.
All right, so now let's talk about the ugly. One of the things you did mention that we missed in our playtesting with this was while we did have a good balance of focus and value decks, and most of them did fall into the balanced quadrant, I think you were right that interaction was relatively light compared to a lot of the more optimized decks that we often play. I actually kind of intentionally chose Aminatu for the first few games that we played because she can get a lot of interaction going, but usually it's a lot slower. At which point, once I'm reanimating Angel of Despair and Ashen Rider over and over and just exiling things all over the place, that's usually like turn 6 or 7 that I'm able to get that kind of engine online. And if Neheb wasn't doing his thing by turn 7, I felt pretty confident that Neheb wasn't doing his thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
By the second night that we were testing things, though, I felt like we had to really push Neheb a little bit more. And that's why I pulled Karlov out. My God, I'm stumbling over all of our K-name decks.
Conrad Corvold Karlov.
Yes. I'm just going to call him Crazy Cat Lady from now on. So I pulled Crazy Cat Lady out, thinking that, all right, this is going to give me a chance to have a clean answer for Neheb. And if Alex brings Flying Dragon Daddy back, I will have an answer to Flying Dragon Daddy as well. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but Neheb still performed through it.
Yeah, it's a little bit faster than I thought it would be, so it's able to present that win pretty quickly. It's helpful in that it's not like I mentioned a single player elimination deck. I just have to find one person with their shields down to get a swing in, and then there's also enough spells that I don't have to rely on combat. I think there was even one game where I played Neheb and I didn't even attack with him. I just let him chill out and then generate some mana off of a Flame Rift or a Sizzle or some other generic bad red card.
Draft Chaff.
Yep.
Hey, Draft Chaff can still win games, and I think this deck really proved it. So, final thoughts on the deck. Alex, why don't you start? You were on the receiving end of this as much as I was.
I definitely enjoyed it. Like the biggest thing for me in terms of, you know, enjoying the gameplay that doesn't involve being punched repeatedly in the face is getting to see you, Jake, enjoy a deck that you were even skeptical of yourself enjoying because, you know, it was outside of the norm for you. And I think you like it was fun to watch you be surprised by what you had put together with your own hands. I mean, in the deck war. I mean, like it sounds weird, but it's like you were so like, oh, I've got this, you know, this derpy red deck that I'm building. It's Neheb. It's not gonna be that good. It's mono red. And then you were sitting here just like, you know, melting faces with it, and like you were just surprised by what you had built, and that was really cool to kind of see and experience. I mean, the deck is solid when it's doing its thing. Like I said, just got punched in the face multiple times by it just out of nowhere. So it's definitely solid, and I mean, it's a testament to see what you can build even when you think it's not good.
Yeah, I built the list on Moxfield, like, I don't know, 2 months ago or something, just kind of on a lark because you guys kept giving me crap for playing black in all my decks. So I'm like, I'll show these guys, and I put this together. I'm like, wow, this is garbage. I'm not going to waste any time building it. And then I did. And I think on that first game when I don't even remember what it was, but it was something where I wound up having to pull out a notepad to write down how much red mana I was going to generate, and I'm like, okay, yeah, this might be good.
Didn't have proper storm count ready?
Yeah, I was like, oh, I wasn't tracking how much damage I was doing, because I thought I would get, you know, like 10, 12 mana or whatever, and I got up into the 80s, I'm like, okay, yeah, this might do something.
Yeah, always have your Stormcrow ready to start counting. I learned that one the hard way. I will also say, Jake, I was pretty impressed. You even dug out some real hidden gems here. For example, Prismatic Lens. This is an artifact most recently printed in Ultimate Masters. Remember when that was supposed to be the last Master set, guys?
Yep.
It's an artifact for 2 generic mana. You can tap it for a colorless or pay 1 and tap it to add 1 mana of any color. I had been looking for more 2-color rocks that came into play untapped for some of my mono-color decks, and that one's actually kind of nice. Oftentimes those
That
decks,
was
yeah.
so it was actually a throwback to my like first CEDH deck of what's the Sidisi, the mono black
Mono black
Sidisi, where
Sidisi, that is Sidisi Undead Tyrant.
yes, where basically the commander was ad nauseam, and I would just play Sidisi to tutor for ad nauseam every single time. You really have to start stretching in these mono color CEDH decks that are trying to go faster than any other deck in the meta. So you got some, there's some bad mana rocks. Like I was running the plane chase one where you can tap it to add one, or you can tap it to reroll the planar die.
Fractured Power Stone.
Yeah, that one. There's some bad mana
But
rocks when you're stuck with one color.
when you're so for most modern mana rocks, paying 2 mana to be able to tap for one generic, one colorless mana coming into play untapped is on rate, and then also having the upside of being able to filter for colored mana in the pinch that you need it. That's actually not bad. I may go dig through my bulk to see if I have any copies of this. Because it may be an upgrade to some rocks in some of my decks, honestly. Especially those more balanced, casual type decks like Oketra. It may be an upgrade. So good find.
Well, thank you. Also, one other random note in here. So this deck runs Memory Jar, which I guess is the first instance of Impulsive Draw. Does that count?
You know what? I'll call it that. I don't know if that's what they were thinking of when they printed Act on Impulse in M15, but I that could be an ancient ancestor. Oh, and it makes me feel so old that I just said that, but Memory Jar came out and was banned after the second time I'd quit Magic. Guys, I'm old.
We're all old, man.
Damn. Anyway, is there anything else that we fell just we missed or fell short with the deck? I think we covered a lot of it pretty well.
Yeah, that's pretty much most of it. We can put a link to the deck list in the show notes and also on the Moxfield Gemstone Mine account if anybody wants to take a look at it.
All right. And so, Jake, you brewed this deck. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. I think at some point we will want to do a proper deck tech with this deck once we've developed it a little bit more and understand it better. But thank you so much for going over this with us on our kind of first pilot episode of talking about these weird new brews that we're working on.
Absolutely. It's almost as much fun as playing it.
It makes me think back to the movie 300, where they're talking about cultures and Gerard Butler's characters. We've been sharing our culture with you all afternoon. It just makes me think that you saying thanks for sharing it with Jake. Jake was sharing with us all evening, like repeatedly.
Over our broken bodies.
Yep.
All right, so now it's time for that segment we're going to call our hot seat, where we're going to have one sentence to answer this question. Jake, you built a deck without black in it. What aspect of Magic would you challenge your co-host to build a deck without, whether it's a color, a kind of card, or a theme? And this is open to everybody here. Think of your answer.
I already know which one's coming my way.
So let me know when you guys have an
This
answer.
is rough. So we don't have to task Jake again with it because he's already risen to that challenge by building a deck without black in it.
I would agree with that. I think Jake has met his requirements.
I'm writing these down so that I. Okay. I think I'm. No.
No, still thinking on it?
Yeah.
It should be. I have a feeling that two of us are going to give the same answer. I'll go ahead and give mine for John right now.
Go for it, Alex.
I'd like to see you build a deck that loops without Scrap Trawler in it.
I am working on exactly that. I'm working on Nethroi. It does not have Scrap Trawler. I cut Scrap Trawler from the deck. That was so I could
I'll
fit
believe
Death's
that when I.
Oasis in. Which makes everything into Scrap Trawler.
I don't believe there's a world that exists where you would willingly cut a scrap trawler from anything.
No, I actually described to Jake as I went through and said, so instead of that, I'm running things like Revelark and Karmic Guide, which are kind of like good scrap trawlers.
Yeah. All right, so that was my I have like two answers. I've got a meme answer and then like a serious one. So for John, it was obviously build a deck without scrap trawler in it.
Guys.
I think I would have seen John build So, like, I got challenged for a non-black deck. I would like to see John build a non-colored deck.
So like colorless.
Yep.
All right, challenge accepted.
Refrigerator Karn. Now we're gonna end up getting here with an Eldrazi. You know that, right?
I mean,
Sure.
it's an Eldrazi or it's
I'm thinking
God.
it would be the. Is it Kozilek, the one where you can discard to counter spells?
Yeah, that's
I'm thinking that's
probably the
probably the
most
Johnnest of.
likely. Yeah.
Yeah. The Johnniest of those.
Yeah, that's fair.
For Alex, the joke answer is you have to build a deck without any elves in
I
it.
knew it. I knew that was the one that was coming.
But for real, I would like to see you build a spell-based combo deck rather than anything that is trying to do red zone type of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's actually very similar to what I came up with, Alex. Trying to see, can you do a challenge you to build a deck that tries to win on the stack as opposed to winning on the battlefield?
Right. That's challenge accepted for that as well.
Interesting.
All right, so these are some pretty good hot seat answers as we try to develop this segment to something that's actually meaningful. This has been a very interesting experiment. So I think as we're kind of approaching that hour mark, it's probably a good time for us to start signing off. I hope everybody has enjoyed this episode. I hope you guys have found it interesting. If you want to find the deck, as we said, it will be uploaded to the Gemstone Mine account on Moxfield. You're going to find all the decks that we go through as we go through all of our arcs on Moxfield. One way or another, we will get them up there. But until next time, I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.